Could there be more than one internet? The answers to this question and more on this week's Radio Berkman. If we look at the internet as some at the U.S. State Department do, as a unified nervous system for the planet, there's not really much room for argument. The world not only needs to have a common understanding of the technological underpinnings of the net, but of what kinds of communication are allowed or restricted. What do we keep anonymous? How do we respect privacy? And how do we deal with massive copyright issues or child endangerment? But there is another view on the net, something that legal scholar Donnie Dong refers to as cyber pluralism, the idea that there are actually two or more internets, not segregated by technology, but by the more established borders of culture, language, and personal preference. According to Donnie, the arguments over freedom and the internet often become much too ideological much too quickly. We focus too simply on how the net in the West compares to China, he says. While we search for a common denominator for the internet, we marginalize the uncommon but possibly important aspects of the net, not only outside our own borders, but within our own borders as well. This week we spoke with Donnie about the multicultural aspect of the net and how we might be able to approach a conversation about freedom in the net.
When we are reading most of the newspapers or news websites in the States, the newspapers, the reporters, are mostly interviewing a part of web users in the Chinese internet sphere. They're just interviewing a part of the web users. Those web users are mostly the users who has either the technological ability or the economical ability to circumvent some kind of the wall to the world. Mm-hmm. So they have different kind of perspectives other than the normal Chinese netizens. This makes the overall impression of the outside of the Chinese network. What is the real difference between the two kinds of the network? I think Chinese people just do their way with their own approaches. They can express, maybe not equal to the way that the States people like to, but mm-hmm. they really can express their interest and to protect their interest by their own way.
I think the perspective that an American or a Western person might have is that when I tweet here in the States, it goes out to my followers, people can read it, anybody can read it. The kind of the stereotype image that is in the head of an American might be that when you're in China and you tweet, it goes through maybe a filter or a censor board to be approved. Is that a realistic presentation?
The kind of so-called censorship in China has actually many levels, I think. One level that was strengthened by a lot of Western media is that the enforcement of the internet companies to do some filterings or censorships, but I don't think that is the only one. Actually, every people, when they are trying to express their views or their arguments, they will consider their situation and the results of those arguments wherever they are, even in the States. I believe when you are twittering something, you are speaking something different than when you are talking with your friend, mm-hmm. your close friend, your boyfriend, your girlfriend. This is totally different. When you are talking something, you are always thinking about what should to be said and what should not to be said in twittering. Mm-hmm. So that is the self-censorship, which exists everywhere. If we have a kind of a way to do some observations of these different kind of restrictions of your mind when you want to express in different kind of societies, you can really understand what a society is. But if before that, you just say, wow, that filtering is bad, that kind of censorship is bad, or that kind of thing. You actually ignored. You are censoring yourself every time, every day when you wake up.
So it's less of a technological imposition or a government imposed censorship regime, and it's more of a culture. It's more of just the users of this internet, of this space, have manners and an etiquette.
Yeah, from my understanding, you know, Chinese society, no matter this, we don't say it is bad or not bad now. I'm not saying we cannot say it in the future when we have some of the observations and we have some conclusions. We can say something is bad and something is good. But currently, a lot of things we cannot say it is good or bad. For example, even in the internet, we will never see a professor's name, the first name. These kind of self-censorship, you can see it, you can make it as a kind of censorship. You can imagine it. That is the culture.
Well, let's talk about these two internets. Is this just a cultural kind of concept, or is this a concept that has some sort of technological and legal implications?
I think at the very, very first, it's technological, because everyone know that internet was actually the network of the networks. At the very beginning, ARPANET was established by the military troops, and then the military just established another net, which is MuNet, and ARPANET connect to the net in the Europe and in France, and then they just connect together. So at the very, very beginning, from my understanding, the internet is separated but networked kind of network. It is possible to make those internet different from each other. Sometimes maybe the difference is very big. Sometimes maybe but just a linguistic difference or this kind of thing.
And right now there's sort of a trend to believe that the internet is one kind of unified technological beast that we all engage in. Is that the reality of what the internet is right now?
The best benefit of the internet for the globalization is that until now it has the unified, at least the protocols are unified almost all over the world. So I think there are two trends. One trend is just like you have said, which is the unified, and people are connecting closer and closer with a different kind of new technologies, applications. But another trend is the different countries, the different system, legal system or cultural systems is more and more trying to affect or influence their own parts of the internet. These two trends are coexisting.
Well, so would you say that there is there could actually be harmful effects to pursuing the trend of the unified internet?
Everyone just can want to connect without any kind of restrictions. That's no problem. And I don't think there is any harmful effect of these kind of things. The problem is, if you don't agree, there are actually nowadays different kind of legal system have actually combined into the different part of the internet in different countries. This is the truth. If you don't admit it, your requirement of that internet be unified is just like a very superficial kind of thing, which you can never discuss with the people in the different parts of the internet. So the first thing, what I am thinking, is just to confess it, firstly. And after you confess, everyone has their own impression to the internet. And you can say, okay, let's discuss what should be a unified internet should be.
Would you say that there are several perspectives of what the internet is?
And yes.
We have our own perspective of what it is, and China might have their own perspective
yes,
of what
exactly.
it is.
Yes, exactly.
But we're all sort of trying to talk about the same thing.
And not only America or China, but also in America, in China, there are a lot of different kind of impressions. Someone may wish more safety to protect their children. Someone may need more connectivity to access easily to any kind of information. Someone may just want to download any kind of music without any restriction. So everyone has their own impressions. How can you say there are only one impressions or one sort of one group of people they can see? That is the future of the internet. And another part is not a future of the internet. Even if we really want a unified internet, you should not jump to that way. You have to firstly, in the first step, to observe different kind of requirements or desires.
Thinking about Hillary Clinton's talk that she gave in January about pursuing a single internet and all the ideas that came out about internet as a human right, I wonder if we're ready to have that conversation, because thinking about all these caveats that you've presented, it presents a more nuanced view of this, that it isn't just a matter of an open or closed or filtered or unfiltered internet.
Exactly.
Even if we talk here, we can talk a lot about free expression here in the States, but there are a lot of things that we do want to have control over. Is this a conversation that you think that the world is ready to have?
From a legal perspective, I don't think so. Because different kind of legal systems still exist. No matter you like it or hate it, it exists. Still, I don't think it's the time nowadays or within 1 or 2 years we have something to define what is the right of, for example, what is the right of internet in the human rights kind of perspective, or what is the right of access, or what is the right of getting information. I really wish to see whether can we talk about the unified internet currently, but we don't have that kind of level. I think it's not the knowledge, it's firstly the attitude.
I do want to ask what kind of feedback you've gotten since you've first started talking about cyber pluralism. What kind of feedback have you gotten about this?
Everybody, as I have said, they have their own impression or own requirements for their own internet. So if they strongly stand for their perspective, either the freedom of expression or the freedom of downloading, any kind of different kind of people, they have different kind of impressions, and they just ask me, why do you think that pluralistic internet should exist? But my response is it's not should be existed. It is existed. So this kind of compromising is still not arrived at the current stage, because we just have more than 10 years or 15 years kind of the internet age. We have a long run to go. I think the attitude is firstly to observe it with the patience. Without that patience, maybe we cannot discuss more.
It feels like a very ideological topic, the way that people talk about it.
Yeah, most of the time, when we are discussing why, that's the reason. When we go to some market, so to buy some, for example, we buy shirts, we just say, well, you like blue one, but I don't like you just to wear that blue one. But if you like it, okay, you like blue one, I like red one. Everyone has that kind of attitude. But when once we talk about the internet, that kind of attitude just like disappeared. Everyone is discussing, well, we don't like you have that blue one, and I really like that red one. So everyone should be the red, should wear the red one.
Well, this has been a really interesting conversation,
and
thank you for taking the time today.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Donnie Dong is a Berkman Fellow, a Fulbright Junior Scholar, and a legal scholar at the City University of Hong Kong. You can follow his work on the web at blogdog.com. That's blawgdog.com. What do you think about this topic? Is cyber pluralism something that you could get behind? Or maybe a little too culturally relativist for your tastes? Leave us a comment at blogs.law.harvard.edu/mediaberkman. This week's episode of Radio Berkman was produced by me, Daniel Dennis Jones, at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts.